We're talking with Henrik Palmgren tonight. He's from Sweden. Talking about the Nordic model and the promotion of the myth of a Scandinavian utopia, how the elite are trying to socialize America. And as we proceed, we will talk about the scientific dictatorship, a dictatorship with a velvet glove, don't you know? The religion of transhumanism and the robotification of mankind, the creation of the hive, the Borg. The goo. Stand by. We'll be back with Henrik in just a moment. This is Coast to Coast AM. John B. Wells and your speakers for the evening, along with Henrik Palmgren. And I'm going to read a little email from Stephen for you here. There's nothing greater than getting to the state of self-challenge and that of seeking perfection in any given society. Just got back from my sixth trip to Sweden and the Netherlands and could not disagree with your guest more so. If anything, in so many ways, they are light years ahead of us. Why are those of your fear-based mindset so afraid to advance and or experiment in the quest of taking the best from other lands to make our land even a better world for all? Your idiotology has only succeeded in creating the second highest inequity nation in the world. A closed mind is a wonderful thing to lose. Well, this is a person who's obviously had his own completely unique experience in going over there because, in my experience, the only people who really enjoy socialism are the fat cats at the top who run it. The only people who enjoy living in a communist situation are the fat cats at the top who run it. Human nature precludes perfection. And that is why America is a wonderful ongoing experiment. Yes, we argue, we name call, and in the end, we prevail. And the last time I checked, up until recently at least, with these ongoing rolling wars, I think we are more of a benefit to most of the world than a detriment. Now, Henrik, if you disagree, you can go ahead and slam me also.
No. I'm not going to do that. This is obviously the problem with the situation in a sense, but also the advantage that we need to discuss these things. We need to talk about it. Some people might think that this is a good thing, and I'm not here to tell them that they can't live like this. And this is the difference here, though, in my approach and the states, government's approach, or some of the other, socialists out there, because they want to say how you should live your life. And that's the case here in Sweden. They say how you should live your life. If you're a little bit different, if you're a little bit of outside of that perimeter, then you're not in trouble, but you're very, very, you come up against a very difficult force, in a sense, an energy to work against, because there's no channel there to express those needs. Even if you have a talent, there's a multitude of reasons that we need to talk about why this, I believe, the system is detrimental. But let's just address a little bit of what the person's saying. Let's address this economy thing, because that always comes up. Free healthcare. There is no such thing. You know, this universalist welfare state that is promoted around the world, that there is no such thing. We are paying for it. Everybody's paying for these things all the time. What's happening is that the government has basically is in a situation where they take things from you. And then if you follow the behavioral model, if you put those money into the right places, okay, you can get a little allowance in a sense back, you know, depending on how you choose to spend those money. But it's all very, again, it's very behavioralist. Let me give you a few examples. If we go back to the ideas of the concept for the home of the Swedish people, folkhemmet, right? There's an assumption that the welfare state of Scandinavia, you know, were high-taxed regimes which tried to redistribute wealth from rich businessmen to the average person. And here's where many people agree. You know, they say, oh, great, you know, let's do that and we can get more money. But actually, in the Swedish case, this is not happening at all. On the whole, the Scandinavian system are not meant to be, you know, redistributive in a sense. Nor are businessmen or even businesses the targets. Businesses are relatively lightly taxed compared to many developed nations. I think it's much more difficult for smaller business owners. But if you talk about monopoly companies that I'm talking about, then you're in a situation where they can, you know, obviously get tax breaks from the government because they work together. The government needs those monopolies so that the Swedes have somewhere to go, you know, to work. But the problem here is that it's the individual that is financially, punished in a sense in the Swedish society. The Swedish welfare state in particular, you know, was designed so that the average individual is highly taxed instead. There's a well-known case here in Sweden of author Astrid Lindgren. She's the one who wrote the, you know, the Pippi Longstocking stories, right?
Right.
And she discovered that her tax bill was 102% of her earnings.
Is that all?
My question is this to the person who's, you know, claiming that this is beneficial for, well, I don't know if they claim that this is beneficial for the individual, but my point here is that, again, on the surface, it might look perfectly fine. If you go to a nice area in Stockholm or Gothenburg and mingle around there, you're going to see, wow, this is amazing, this is great, where all the money from all the people around the country has been put into. First of all, it's really expensive in people, in the business world, the marketplace. It's very expensive for people to live, to eat. They don't make that much in terms of, we talk about the salary distribution. It's kind of even across the board, and some people think that this is great, and that's fine. I'm not here to say that you can't think like that. I'm just saying, if you have a drive in Sweden, if you have a reason to try to make it outside of this box, in a sense, if you're an inventor, if you've done something great, these talents are not, you know, encouraged, in a sense. There is a really strange unwritten law in Sweden, which is called the Jante law, and this is basically it's a pattern of group behavior towards individuals within Scandinavian communities, which negatively portrays and criticizes individual success and achievements as unworthy and inappropriate. Many Swedes would deny, this is not there anymore, blah, blah, blah. I would argue, yes, it is. It's still there under the current. This has been ingrained into the people for many, many, many years. We potentially might even be talking hundreds of years here. So, you know, this law basically states that, you know, don't think you're anything special, or that you're, you know, better than us, in a sense. It's all about the hive that I wanted to talk about earlier. And again, I encourage this person to go to some of the smaller cities around in Sweden and just check out some of the options that they have there. You'll have one chain of the grocery stores you can see everywhere. There's hardly any choice when it comes to the, you know, if you want to have clothes items or stuff like that. We get the imported stuff in from China. There's no production left in Sweden. It's all a service economy. Everything is so equal that it's detrimental. It's egalitarianism that I'm talking about. Sure, some people will think that this is fantastic and great. I don't. I think it's a problem. I think it's great there is diversity, that there is differences. If you could take this person out to some of the gulags outside of Stockholm or, you know, Gothenburg or Malmö, the three biggest cities in Sweden, and see how people live in these apartments that are like concrete boxes, dwellings to exist in, I think that this person would disagree. We had an American, teacher at Stockholm University, was on our program talking about this. He had lived in Sweden for, I think it was 11 years, something like that. And, you know, it was interesting to talk about his perception of Sweden when he first came here, some of the things that were happening. But he even mentioned, actually, he had a friend who was, you know, more liberal, more progressive on the left side of the politics swing. And he was that, in, you know, all the time until he came to Sweden and could actually see the effects of the system. I want to get back to this point again, that we're, you might think, you might have the perception that everything is for free or something like that. But again, it's taxed, one of the most highly taxed people in the world. So again, we're paying for all these things. Yet, when the government has a monopoly on these things to offer, you know, talk about healthcare, the hospital situation, it's really bad. It's really poor. The service, if you can call it that the government is providing is very bad. But there's so few private hospitals that there's no option. There's no competition. There's no reason for the government to try anything harder because there's no one offering a better service when it comes to this. I mean, I took a cat to the vet. It got better treatment than my mom did, who ended up in the hospital and went, you know, went quicker. It ended up costing less. You still pay money when you go to the, you know, the hospital. It costs money. Although they take, you know, what, 33% from you, from your income, then 25% at least sales tax on everything across the board.
Wow.
We're so highly taxed. It's amazing. So I encourage this person, in a way, just to finish that point, to really try to get into the civilization, into the society. And in some cases, you need to live here for a year, maybe even 2 years, before you really get the feel and the sense of it, of things. You can visit, and it might be a surface which kind of looks good. Well, I don't think that personally, because I've been traveling around the country. I've been seeing some of these smaller areas, the horrible, million program, as was called, when the government decided to wreck all these wonderful old wooden houses in Gothenburg, in Stockholm, and in some of these, outside cities, because they had determined under this million program that we must have update how people live. So they created these projects, the million project of these 1 million homes were supposed to build, were built for Swedes. And travel around in the suburbs and look at some of these houses now and tell me if you're not back in, Soviet Russia when you see some of these buildings.
Beautiful concrete horrible. Cubicles for all, right?
Yes, exactly. And so that's my point. What I'm getting at is that I think we can achieve something better, something greater. The society has stagnated, and I'm seeing that across, all the countries around the world have different problems. I'm not advocating and saying that somewhere else is better. Really, I'm just trying to see what the problem is here. This is within the line of thinking locally, look at what's happening around you and try to observe that and share that knowledge with people around the world who are willing to listen, so that when a system like this is being offered to the rest of the world, that they can make up their mind in the right way instead of just be given the propaganda about it.
I think the thing that people should be taught, and thanks, Stephen, for that email, because you set off some good discussion here with it. The thing about it is You can succeed. There is this thing called individual achievement, initiative, stuff like that. Henrik, before we get too far away from this, I wanted you to finish up on the stolen child. So let's just go from sixth gear back down into third, and tell me about this child that was taken away from these people by the state.
Absolutely. Kristi Johansson, the father, and his wife, Annie, got their child, Dominic Johansson, stolen from them by the Swedish social services. The fact is that so far, no Swedish, Nordic media, for that matter, has touched the story. Yet we hear, about human rights abuses from every other country all the time. One of the problems, and I believe one of the reasons for this, is because the papers in Sweden get press subsidies, meaning they get money from the state. Great. Now, so are they going to, attack the hand that feeds them, in a sense? Of course not. It's not going to happen. So that's a major problem right there. So CBN, the Christian Broadcasting Network from America, had to come over here to Sweden to actually do a first-time interview with Christer and his wife, Annie, to cover this horrible story. And I saw it not too long ago. And it's just incredible to me. This was just in the window, a little bit before homeschooling actually was banned in Sweden. So the parents had actually gotten the okay, the go-ahead from the authorities in Stockholm first. To do this, to homeschool their child. But right when they were actually going to leave for the mom's, original home in India, they were going to go back there, do some, help aid work and things like that. So they were heading back there, and then the local authorities on the island of Gotland, which is, kind of a little bit east of Sweden, outside of Sweden, they decided to actually take Dominic away. While they were on the plane, they caused this whole ruckus scene where they're taking away the child. The mother, by the way, has had so many issues with panic attacks since this time that she hardly can even talk about it. They've totally destroyed this family. And when they were taking Dominic away, he was actually he was throwing up so much that they had to take him to the ER room because of his body response to this horrible, abusive situation that they put this family through right there on the plane when everybody stared, and you can just imagine the silence, of course, of everybody. And they have not been able to see him. They've seen him sporadically since, but they don't even know where he is. They've been working for this case now on it for over 2-3 years. Again, it's a long story, and people can listen to it to themselves, but it's just amazing. I mean, and then later on, the social services came up with these reasons that, Dominic has cavities. So that's a problem. Well, what kid doesn't have a cavity? That's just ridiculous. And you don't have enough furniture at home was one of the reasons. So
oh
they don't
gosh.
Have enough, IKEA furniture in their decorated little, apartment that the government has slammed up for them to be okay. This is the problem. They set the standard of how you should live your life. Again, I'm not saying that it's all that bad. People might say, okay, well, you're, you know, this is really bad because there's people starving around the world, there's lots of problems happening, and here you are, kind of your little brat, me in this case, trying to criticize this wonderful system that we have here. But what I'm getting at is something deeper, something beyond the physical comfort, something that goes into the psychic realm, the mental realm. There's more things happening, brewing underneath the surface that are really, really bad, really dark. There's a reason why this movie and the book, the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, coming out from this society, because that's a message being sent across the world. And that's why it's gotten so huge, in a sense, where things are so perfectly polished clean on the surface. There's things happening underneath, and that's the subconscious energy flow that's speaking to the rest of the people, like, you know, you better watch out here because something's going on.
Yes, a little bit too sterile. That obsession with sterility, you know, sort of smacks of the unclean collective mind. So, well, let me ask you this now. Privacy, controlled press. I mean, does the government spy? Is dissent tolerated, or does anybody even know of anything to dissent about? I mean, what are the privacy issues there, or is there any privacy? Is it all just open? Sort of sounds like it is.
Well, this is the I think the perception is that it's an open society. This has been talked about all the time, but then we have cases like this Dominic case. It's very much the lid is being put on, hence people don't hear about these cases, so nobody knows that it's really happening. People have a tendency not to communicate with each other. I'm still trying to figure this one out, why this is the case, why it is that something which, you know, should be a component, especially of a more of a collectivist culture. You think that, oh, you know, people are more open, they talk with each other. And again, just to, you know, have that disclaimer in there, there always is people that are breaking this mold where things are better, they're open-minded, it's good, they're trying, they understand the problems. But again, I'm just speaking generally of the observations that I've made. Sure. of the society, you know. So it's not that you really need surveillance cameras everywhere, because, I mean, I don't think that there is not crime in Sweden. Of course there is. But again, it's this veneer that things are very secure and taken care of. So, people are, in a sense, even policing themselves. So this is the next step of the police state, when you don't even need an infrastructure for those kinds of things. So again, on the surface, it might look, ah, oh, that's great. See, the government trusts their people. There's not too much surveillance cameras. There's not too much, you know, tagging and stuff. But at the same time, if you look beneath the surface, if you look into the bureaucracy of things, that certainly is invasion there. I mean, Sweden has spearheaded so many different things within the New World Order. Let me just give you a few examples of this. We were the first country, for instance, to start, you know, surveying the population, the numbers. The Lutheran Church began with that in the 1600s. They kept the records in the parish register. And I mean, the church in this case is the New World Order, if anybody, you know, have doubts about that. The evidence is in the expansion that it made in Sweden. First the Roman Church, then the Lutheran, and of course how they made it. They've tortured and hunted and suppressed and disciplined these people for more than 1,000 years, I would say. It's incredible. And they even used the Vikings, by the way, to do their battles for them over, you know, fighting our Celtic brothers over in Scotland and England. It's incredible. So all of this history has been suppressed, first of all. But just to go back to some of the spearheading things, we were the first country in Europe to issue banknotes. The first European banknotes were issued by Stockholm's Banco, the predecessor of the Bank of Sweden, back in 1661. We're the first country who has initiated a central bank, the Swedish Riksbank, founded in 1668. And, I've heard people argue before that Sweden, in many ways, are, you know, behind many of these ideas of the banking structure and the system in that way. So the control structure has been perfected over many, many hundreds of years in this case. We have the issue of, you know, personal numbers. You need a number that you're given associated with your birth date. You can't make a move without it. You have mandatory ID cards. And flavor of things to come, by the way, is we're the first society. They're going to aim to get completely cashless. This is a report that came out a couple of days ago, actually, now.
Let's talk about that when we come back from this break, Henrik. We're going to have to take a hard one here. Got a lot of breaks, but I want to hear about this cashless thing that's coming as we continue our singular discussion with Henrik Palmgren on Coast to Coast AM. Somebody keeps asking, Wall, is your guest tonight an Obama basher? I don't think we've even brought him up, so forget about it, Phil. And the other part is, the more we get rid of risk and the more level we make the playing field, the more stagnant we become. All it takes is just a little cruise through the history books, reading and studying, preferably a book that is pre-revisionist. We'll lay that out very clearly. Stagnation is what crushes civilizations, and we all have an equal opportunity to stagnate. We'll be back with Henrik Palmgren in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Henrik Palmgren, would you amplify a little bit what you were saying about Stieg Larsson's book, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and the corollary you were making with tonight's discussion?
Okay, sure. I mean, this is I believe, a reflection of the dark side, if you will, that we are unconsciously, for the most part, are in the process of examining right now. I think the whole world is going through, for different reasons, a tumultuous period. This is kind of an upheaval time right now, and people are attracted to dark stuff. And I think that there is a reason for this. We want to try to understand it. We want to try to examine those things. So the particular allure, if you will, that has seemed to have, you know, popped up around the world by Stieg Larsson's The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and the following, you know, novels and all the films and everything, has probably been because they've been set in what we perceive as being a very controlled, calm and safe place. But as I've been trying to explain, there is something, you know, underneath there. There is a horror story in one sense happening here, but it's not overt. It's not obvious. And that's really the point I want to try to get to. I mean, I personally can't understand why this, you know, film has gotten that much attention, really. I mean, it's not really, the books are not really well written, I think. And the films are, you know, I don't know. It's just not for me. It's, you know, people are attracted to it for different reasons. I understand that, though. I understand the appeal to that darkness. But the fact is, it's almost like the books and the movie is kind of a whitewash at the same time, because Stieg Larsson, first of all, who was a socialist, he was, you know, a communist himself. He was I believe, actually a Fabian, have kind of, in one sense, you know, he's put attention into an area that obviously should be examined. But there is, you know, to be more fair, there's a far more darker, sinister agenda being played out by the, you know, the political left sphere that had a, you know, has had a stranglehold on this country, you know, since the 30s, that just for brief interludes has been out of power. I mean, I think it's, if we would look in the history books, I think the Social Democrat Party of Sweden probably has one of the, like, must have a world record in being, you know, in the power role for the longest period of time. So again, I'm not saying that all the people behind these are evil or that they have bad intentions and everything. It's kind of a tricky to try to wean this out, because I sincerely believe that some people within this really think that they're doing the right thing and a good thing. And also, for a fact, is that at the time that they were doing this, in the 30s and 40s and after, you know, World War II, these updates, if you will, to the system, they were maybe great for that time. They were necessary at that point. But the danger is that the lack of change, the movement of the change, which is glacial again, has been too slow. It's not, in that sense, happening fast enough. It's not being updated with the needs of the current time. So that's why it's so dangerous, because it's, you know, stagnated in that sense.
Let me ask you something, Henrik.
Sure.
How is America viewed? And, you know, you never see yourselves the way others see you. What is the perception of your observations of people's opinions of us and what's going on over here? There have been people in some other countries that say, hey, you guys better watch what you're doing over there, because can you not see what's happening to you? And maybe we can't see fully what's happening to us, but we certainly feel it. We feel that something is happening here that represents a really big change from what we've known. So my question is how are we perceived by the Swedes? How are we perceived by you?
Well, this is the unfortunate part, I think, because there is a lot of, as you might be aware of, John, there is a lot of America bashing around the world happening. A lot of, you know, there's almost like there's this, you know, cultural, you know, conflict in a sense going on. And it's always, you know, when we invite Americans, you know, to our program to talk, even some have some kind of, you know, they almost feel like they need to you know, apologize or something like that. That like that they're American almost in a sense, which is very, very, it's very, you know, strange for me to see that and to read that in one sense. It's almost like, obviously, just to clarify one thing, America is being used by the same forces that are, you know, controlling the world, the global empire, call them whatever you want to call them. They're using America as the, it's the fist, if you will, of the New World Order. This is the tool that is the most obvious that they're using, the military force around the world. So people in that sense are so shallow that they think that it's, you know, Americans' fault, which it isn't. I mean, in a certain extent, okay, yes, there is a responsibility in the sense that, you know, the people allow a government to be in place and to do certain things. And partially, obviously, that is why we're seeing this, you know, the Occupy movement. There's a lot of people, you know, showing their dissatisfaction with the system that's growing up around it. I mean, what is it? I read a report back in 2010. I think more than 53% of U.S. tax payment, the money goes to the military. When you're at a time where this needs to go to things in your own country to help your own, you know, people in that sense. We have, you know, top secret assassination technology being developed for, you know, 58 billion so far. As is, you know, I've read that a day. This, the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessment, they began doing some reliable estimates. I think it was back in, you know, 2010, this report, and they said that currently the total is 58 billion US dollars. And this is kind of the, you know, I don't know if the DARPA stuff is included in this, all this alternative kind of weird technology that they're developing as well. But in regard, it's a lot of money. So when people see this on the surface, I think from outside of America, they tend to think that this is the will of Americans also, which I believe it isn't primarily. I see them being used as other people being used. So here, unfortunately, in a country like this, it's also a tendency to kind of, you know, compete almost with the systems. Again, it's the divide and conquer that we talked about in the beginning of the program, John, which is so important, where people end up identifying even with a nation that hasn't, you know, cared for people in for, you know, hundreds of years. Yet people here in Sweden might kind of side with Sweden and say, yes, you know, you are wicked and evil over there in America, you know, weird stuff like that. I don't understand that discussion at all, because we have to go deeper underneath the surface in order to understand the geopolitical, you know, how the geopolitical chessboard, if you will, is being played around the world and why. And although you guys say no to your government, they go ahead and do things anyway. They don't turn around and ask you guys, hey, you know, by the way, can we invade another country? They don't.
That's correct. They don't ask us.
Exactly. And they just do what they want to do. And
this, No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, this is what happened back in 2003, John. I mean, we had more people out, I think, around the world protesting than ever before, as far as I know, as far as I remember, in 2003 against the Iraq War. Yet all the forces behind it went ahead and do it. They're not listening to the people. There's another reason why they try to sway public opinion in a certain area. But in this case, the majority anyway, which I think, were not behind it. And hence, it's also kind of interesting enough been a, well, it could be argued and debated if it's been a failed, you know, mission in that sense. But the fact is that they've definitely been, you know, left stranded there for a longer time than they initially wanted to, unless that it actually is the plan to establish more military bases and all this. This can be argued. But even from an official point of view, it's been, you know, going on for a lot longer than I actually wanted. So they just do stuff. They just do things without asking their people. And so hence we have to ask ourselves, are we truly responsible? To what degree can we, you know, rise up in a sense against our government and try to make them, you know, enforce the will of the people? Because that's truly not what they're doing right now. And we're seeing this across the world. And it's really, really unfortunate, John.
Well, it's obvious that the government, they of the government and the hierarchy think that we are too stupid to make any sort of demands or make any sorts of decisions. We have repeated, it is a blatant and patent violation of the Constitution of the United States to commit military force into harm's way with force of arms without congressional approval. And it's happening over and over and over again. The big question on everybody's mind is, well, exactly what do we do about this? Do we get our torches and our pitchforks and march to the palace? That's not going to work. And really, as ham-handed and as, you know, toddling as this Occupy Wall Street movement has been, I applaud them for getting out there and assembling for a redress of grievances. However, this is being made illegal because you can be arrested if the Secret Service is even on duty in an area where you're protesting, even if you're not aware that there is someone under their protection there. You can be arrested under federal law. And this NDAA thing, you don't have to be guilty of anything. All you have to be is accused. It's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So we are becoming more and more helpless here. And before, if we let it go much farther, there will be very little we can do, if anything. And perhaps this would be a good time for us to just shift gears here. You mentioned the scientific dictatorship. Well, does this begin with surveillance and heat rays to keep the you know, the torches and the torch and pitchfork bearers away from the palace? What do you mean by a scientific dictatorship?
Well, in a sense, it's kind of what I've been talking about all along. It's many components involved in that. It's both behavioral, meaning it's like a psychological program running, and an economical and a social program running underneath, obviously control people in order to control the population. But on top of this, you have a infrastructure of technology being in place and also being built out all the time, which goes back to some of the things we addressed earlier, you know, with artificial intelligence, these, you know, supercomputers. The question of AI, for instance, has been one that I've been interested in for a long time. You know, what is it? Is it the real thing? If so, if it's actually out there already or been created somewhere, how far advanced is it? You know, some people argue that it might actually be pretty advanced at this point already and is out there scouring the information networks to assess the situation as much as possible. In other words, collecting data mining, and this is might even be possibly another ulterior motive to what Google and Facebook and these you know, social networks are doing. They're definitely collecting data on the human species. There's so much data on there now on behavioral patterns, at least what they talk about and opinions and things. And I personally think that this is being sold to the, you know, Axiom corporations of the world, is being processed, possibly being put in as variables into some kind of supercomputer that's going to assess the situation. And the more predictable human beings are, we're back to this point again of why they wanted, you know, kind of diminish the bandwidth, the ratio of the different expressions, individualities, personalities that people have. The fewer those are, the more predictable as a species we become. People might even be on pills in one sense. So they're completely numbed off in one sense, which also makes them predictable. So all of these things might be, you know, put into a system in order to assess the situation of what they are going to do next in order to completely take things over. And again, I'm not trying to, you know, fear monger or anything like that. There's a lot of people who say that this is like an earlier comment that you mentioned, John, that this is about instilling fear and everything like that. But this, in all fairness, that's not what it is. We have to look and focus, you know, on the dark side, or focus, but we need to at least recognize it. We need to understand what it is in order to combat it. If we stick our heads in the sand because it's just too upsetting and too scary, then we're going to lose the plot. We have
well,
to.
If you see a dark sail out on the horizon, chances are it's you're not fear-mongering. If you say, I see a dark sail out there on the horizon and it's headed this way, that's not fear-mongering. That's just a slightly heightened state of awareness, wouldn't you think?
Absolutely. Exactly. And this is what this is all about, pattern recognition. You're studying and assessing, you know, as you have to do, the situation. And when you put, you know, one and one together, you can see that, okay, that's probably going to turn out to be two right there. So that's just what you see. So you present it, you talk about it to raise your concerns, to spread the information within, you know, the human network in that sense, so that people can understand these things. And if they end up in a situation where they will have an impact depending on the choices they make, they can see that whatever choice they make now is going to have an impact in some way, like a domino effect throughout the world. And I think the larger we can see that the spanning, in a sense, across the globe, the better it is that we can properly understand that, okay, whatever choice I'm doing right now, that is going to either aid this, you know, or it's not going to aid this. And hence we'll be, you know, making a better assessment of the situation. I think really in terms of solution-wise, we talk about that. That's one of the primary things we need to do, not only talk about this stuff and get the information out, but also spread that awareness level of things. If we truly understood what we want when we buy something, let's say in the store, what company we bought that from, I think we would maybe be prone to not buy it. We would understand, okay, wait a minute, this is supporting, you know, the wrong ideas that I'm behind. I don't, you know, support the philosophy either of the, you know, the company or even the people behind this corporation. I think that's why people need to go back almost to a local think again, see what is happening in the community, in a sense, and what is needed there, what is necessary there, and support the people that you do know that are closer to you. In that sense, that's back to, you know, one of the American ideals there about the mom and pop kind of business and stuff, which unfortunately is obviously diminishing over there, and it's been diminishing here forever. There's hardly anything such left. It's monopolies, and that's why again it's so dangerous, you know. So if we just focus on the solution bit, I think the most important thing we can do is have awakened, intelligent, rational, aware, but also kind of sensitive people who actually have a touch with their intuitive abilities, that they actually can, you know, understand things and feel things. Like, ah, something's off here, something's not right, I'm not going to support this, or I'm not going to do that. And I think a lot of the problems, in a sense, we're faced with would not automatically disappear, but at least a lot of weight in that sense of our shoulders would be lifted if we just knew that we were doing the right things. It's one of my, you know, one of the most simple things I think we can do. So you could like support a local economy instead of, you know, the gigantic monopolies that are out there. It's very basic in a sense, but it's almost like we're thinking too much on it in some cases. We're making it too big and too troublesome. And that's kind of maybe the dangerous part. We feel defeatist. It's like, oh, there's nothing I can do anyway, so I'm just going to carry on as I'm doing. That's not the way.
Well, you know, and the more they are able to divide us, the less we believe that we are on the same page with anybody else. In fact, as we approach our break for the top of the hour, we got a lot of stuff to cover in the last hour here, Henrik, so be ready, because I'm going to ask a bunch of questions and you have large thoughts, so condense them as best you can, because the audience will then do their own research on those things that they're interested in. We'll go forward. But back in the hippie days when dinosaurs roamed the earth, somebody put a poster up that said, what if they had a war and nobody came? I wonder what would happen if all of a sudden it's like, we don't feel like funding your wars anymore. And when April 15th got here, nobody went to the post office. Is that dangerous speech? Probably. Too bad. We do that sometimes on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be back.